You are now tuned into Big Market Bites.
Good morning, afternoon, evening, everyone, and welcome to Big Market Bias. Coming at you live from the West Coast, I'm Cameron Green, and on the East Coast, we've got Peter Daubert. What's happening, Peter?
A lot's happening, Cam. A lot is happening. And I could use some positivity after that All-Star game. So before we introduce our guests today, and we have some fun talkings, I believe you went to Las Vegas, am I right?
I did.
And you became the world's greatest gambler while you were there.
Well, you know, I can't speak for myself, but only what off of the delusions of grandeur other people are giving to me. You see, I placed 8 NBA bets and I hit 6 of them. So I put down $80 and I made $120. So just call me Moneybags, you know, Moneybags Green.
You took over the whole strip.
Yeah. And I got to play some slots for fun. I almost hit a jackpot. I was like 3 spaces away. And then I lost it on some other machine. But overall, it was a blast, and now I know I can do some gambling at the local casino, so I'm going to start doing that from time to time. But I placed 2 future bets before I left Vegas.
Really?
I did. And they were both for who would win the Eastern Conference.
Oh, okay. So you bet on the Celtics then? So that way you,
I did
you don't
not,
want to just
no,
throw away your money. So you
no,
bet on the Boston
you
Celtics.
You can't make any money betting on the Celtics because of the Green Beer Mafia.
Joke's on you. We have to remember that. We'll have to snip that. And then when the Celtics win this year, you're going to have to answer for yourself.
Yeah, sure. I'm not worried at all. First, by the way, to quote Chrissy, Celtics suck! She actually put it in my head. I need to start trash talking a little more, so I'm going to try to do that. But anyways, 2 futures bets, both of them on the Eastern Conference. The first one, which is a little bit lower odds, was for the Cavaliers to win the Eastern Conference. They've just been really impressive to me. They've got so many two-way players, and their offense looks like a championship offense to me, just the way that it works, the way that the ball moves from side to side and how they work as a team together. But then the higher odds, but the one I feel even better about, I bet on the New York Knicks to win the Eastern Conference as well.
What?
I did. And so $10, I only bet $10 on it, but if I got it right, I could win $80 from it.
Oh,
so,
wow.
And it doesn't feel like that much of a stretch to me. If the matchups go right, either the Cavs or the Knicks could end up in the finals. It also is a little bit of a lack of faith on the Celtics, too.
Your faith will be punished later on. Though I do say, you know, the Knicks, they do scare me just a little bit. I'm not worried, but I'm not exactly feeling comfortable with the idea of playing them in the first round. So, you know, maybe your money, you know, it still feels like you're lighting it on fire to me. But you know, maybe with like a Bic lighter and not necessarily a bonfire.
Pouring gasoline on it.
Yes.
Well, without further ado, Peter, would you introduce your fellow East Coasters?
Well, I mean, of course, we have 2 wonderful Knicks fans here. We're going to talk New York. And first, I think I have to introduce Georgetown's own Miss Carolyn Smalls over here. Carolyn Smalls, how are you feeling about the New York Knicks?
Optimistic. Cautiously optimistic. This is a very long time of being a Knicks fan. I don't want to say the word excited, but I'm very close to that. The closest I've probably been since Melo, Novak, Nate Robinson, D. Lee. So that's got to count for something. So life has gone up this season. Life's gone up.
We've leveled up. The Knicks have leveled up, most definitely. Multiple times in one season, some might argue. Also, we've got on with us as a guest, Nick Foster. Nick, who do you think is the best matchup for the Knicks in the playoffs?
To be honest, I we're fully healthy, I'm still going to go with the Cavs because we've seen it before. And at the end of the day, I think as impressive as they've been this season, one, Jared Allen is short. I think they're definitely counting the hair in the measurements. And I think that teams build around two small guards and two bigs who can't shoot, with a huge remaining question mark at the fifth spot. It just seems like they haven't fixed whatever fundamental issues they have. And I think it's telling that this amazing run the Cavs have been on has been when they've been able to have a lot of high volume 3-point shooters who are unproven in the playoffs alongside Mitchell and Allen. And as much as they've still been good since the guys came back, going into the playoffs last year, they had much better nerd metrics than the Knicks did. And it didn't matter because they couldn't rebound. Cautiously optimistic.
Oh man, both Knicks fans are trying not to jinx them right now.
That's the anxiety of losing for as long as they have. It's you can't let yourself get too high.
It's the Dolan effect.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I'll say for me, it's also assuming health, which is for any number of reasons not something you can really assume. It's more that there are all these very rational reasons to be very excited, to think that a conference finals run, or if Boston melts down in a lot of fourth quarters, that something special could happen. But it's more, the weight of history and a lot of history that is fueling the cautious side of the equation there.
I hear that. I've just been kind of impressed, even though their front court rotation is down quite a bit right now. No Randall, no Robinson. I've been impressed with Sims, and I've been impressed with, they just traded for him from the Raptors, and I can't pronounce his name.
Well, neither can Josh Hart, apparently, if you're talking about
Precious Achiuwa.
Taj Gibson hasn't got you excited about the Knicks in 2024?
Not at all. That's the biggest glaring hole in the roster for
me. That's the cautiously optimistic part of being a Knicks fan, is we have Taj Gibson in 2024. That's that part.
Yeah, and there's also with the injuries, the report, like the Knicks front office, which has been about as effective as we could have imagined since I got here, they basically don't say anything. They're pretty tight-lipped.
Mm-hmm.
And so you never, as much as the prognosis has been optimistic, according to the beat writers, on everyone from Randall to OG, to Partenstein, DiVincenzo, you just never know, particularly with how nebulous and weird the reporting is. Half the time we don't even know what the actual injury is, which I kind of get from the front office perspective, but just the All-Star break came at a very, very good time.
Yeah, it's just the modern day. It's like, he'll be really reevaluated in a month, and that doesn't mean he'll be out for a month.
Well, I mean, they at this point, it's just about trying to gel this team together. I mean, they've been looking so good. They look so good for so long, but right now, they're on a 4-game losing streak, and that's obviously partially due to the health, and so getting everyone back quickly is important. But at the same time, if Julius Randle, is really hurt, and maybe it might make more sense to rest him, but also, you added OG not too long ago, and so it makes, I think, the most sense. You want to gel that team together. You want everyone playing for as long as possible, but you also can't really rush back Randle, because the worst thing is that if he gets hurt in the first round or the second round or something like that, and then all of a sudden, as frustrating as he is to watch, he is still the number two guy on the team. And so it's kind of tough. They're kind of I don't know. There's a middle ground there. There's like an exact perfect time to bring him back. I just don't know when that is.
I agree. And I think part of it also from like a coaching perspective, an opponent is how much do you want to give your opponents an idea of what you're going to be doing and how you're going to gel these guys together. That right now there's not a lot of film on, there's not a lot of lineups on them. So how much do you want to rush him back and for what purpose? You know, if he's not going to be 100%, which who really is at this point in the season, but do you want to rush him back? We know Tibbs likes to play starters and that's it. So he's not going to come back and play 30. He's going to come back and play 40. So, you know, you have to kind of weigh that option too of when you're bringing these guys back and how much time you're giving the rest of the league, mainly, you know, the Eastern Conference, to scout you, to see what you're running, how you're pushing these guys together too. I think that's what I think of too.
Yeah, I mean, they just traded for a couple pieces, obviously Burks and Bogdanovich. And I've liked a lot of how Bogdanovich has fit into the offense so far. Obviously, you can work him on defense a little bit, but when you get some of those pieces back, that won't be as much of a problem. He'll probably be limited more in the playoffs, but for right now, it's like without Randall in the lineup, it means that the rest of the crew can kind of gel and get a feel for things. And, you know, I mean, kind of going back to the Cavs, you had those guys not doing very well, and then Garland and Mobley both got hurt, and then all of a sudden the team got to kind of pick up the pieces and figure some things out so that when they came back, they just hit the ground running. So I think that's just what you're hoping for Randall, is that the team gels together, the offense comes together and grows into something better than the shape of its part, or better than the sum of its parts, which already is pretty close to that, because I'd say right now Brunson is turning the ball over a lot more and during this losing streak, because he doesn't know where his people are supposed to be yet. And I just feel like that's going to go down as the season goes on. And when Randall comes in, he'll have just so much more spacing and just competency to work with.
Well, one of the most encouraging parts about seeing players who otherwise would have smaller roles is that Dante, the volume and efficiency that he's shooting from, like, well beyond three and with a lot of extra attention has been really encouraging, because something you never know about a lot of these regular season three-point specialists is how, like, I always think about Joe Harris and how he basically, like, has been a catastrophe in the playoffs because just teams are guarding him so much closer. And in the case of
they're allowed to guard him differently, let's be honest. They're allowed to guard them differently in the playoffs.
Yeah, and it's I mean, the flip side to that is we do have an example of a player on the Knicks who thrives in the regular season and it's not gone great, to be charitable, in the playoffs so far. And I think as a Knicks fan, the glass half full for Randall is that, oh, like, he needed ankle surgery last year, that's why he was shooting like 30% or something. But it's like, there's definitely a lot of reasons to be optimistic, but there are definitely more question marks, particularly like with like how many of these players, like, if Mitch can come back this season, he will have never played with OG until then. And the question is whether the fit would be so seamless that, as Smalls is saying, it's something other teams won't have much to prepare with. But you don't know. And then particularly with a coach like Tibbs, who's so, like, he trusts his guys and will run them into the ground. Like, if Boyan misses like a couple defensive rotations in the first round, will he get buried? Or, like, that's, you hope not. But those are the kind of questions that against like the very best teams will probably come up. The flip side is that outside of Boston, it's not like there's anyone really, there's another juggernaut. And I mean, Milwaukee has been just lost to like the hospital Grizzlies, but you don't know.
Yeah, I mean, Milwaukee's a theoretical contender still. And Doc Rivers, I mean, while I've already said in the show before, he's competent, but he doesn't add to your ceiling in the playoffs. Thibs versus Doc Rivers in the playoffs, man. Let's go.
Contest of champions.
Yes.
It's the matchup we've all been waiting for.
Yeah, you would say that.
Listen, I have no bad blood with Doc, okay? We won a ring with Doc Rivers. So in my eyes, that's who he is, and that's who he'll always be.
And how many championships did the Boston Celtics have in the last 20 years?
Unnecessary. Completely unnecessary. Okay? But who delivered it? Okay? It was Doc. Doc Rivers.
Delivers championships.
Alright? He's a champion. He's a proven winner. He beat Kobe Bryant. Mr. 19 feet, three statues. Kobe Bryant lost to Doc Rivers in the playoffs. That's a fact right there.
Yeah, no, it's I actually forget about that championship sometimes because it's not like all the people involved don't bring it up like every single time they have an appearance. Like, I feel like Kendrick Perkins slips it in like every other day he's on First Take or something. But no, I'm glad for the memory refresh on perennial winner Doc Rivers.
Well, listen, I don't think Kendrick Perkins wants to talk about his OKC years, so he really just has to focus on that little run in Boston and hope that he can just kind of glide through on that. So it's okay. Mm. You know, to go back to the Knicks, not the Boston Celtics, they're right now, you know, the East is so jumbled, right? Except for, of course, the Boston Celtics, which, once again, are the best team. But, like, you know, it's so, there's so much there. It could jump, you know, we have like two more months of the season. Who knows what the order will be. Right now, as of today, it's the Knicks Sixers in the first round. And I with the Knicks having home field advantage there, which I think is really cool. Assuming Joel Embiid is back, let's just pretend that this is the matchup, first round. Joel Embiid has come back. He looks great. And Randall's back. He looks great. We're all looking great. How would you guys, I guess, feel about that matchup?
Is Mitch back? Is Mitch Robinson back?
He's not projected to come back until like conference finals time period, I think.
Mm. I think his initial reevaluation it was exactly 10 weeks ago, according to, but that could mean like a year from now. It could.
Yeah. That's tough. So let's just say for the first round he's out.
Okay.
Mitch Robinson's out for the first round.
Honestly, I'm taking the Knicks.
All right. I love to hear it.
I think it will. It's not going to be a sweep. I do think it's going to probably go six games. But that's what the Knicks like. We know at the end of the day, no other team in the league is going through a tips practice. So if it takes seven games, it takes seven games. But I do feel confident. I think that by that point, everyone will have gelled together. Everyone will have a better sense and idea of what their role on that team is. And you're not going to have to guess in what order things are going or guess in the situations, right? So I do think that part kind of helps. And I think it also helps that they were a good group of them, not all of them, but a good core of them, were made that run last playoffs, and you kind of have that camaraderie, that kind of sense of this is what to expect, which I think is also very helpful. And the Sixers with Maxey being in this season in this position that he was not in before, I do think teams can in a series will be able to dissect and figure out, okay, how are we going to slow him down? How are we going to stop this? And I think that first season, when you are the guy, and especially when you're a guard and you are the guy, is really difficult in a playoff series because it's four games of at least of the same team, and I think that part can be very tricky.
Yeah, also the longer the series goes the slower Embiid gets.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah, I mean, it's just there's not much of a track record of, I mean, the Embiid is obviously this amazing MVP player who is, if he hadn't got hurt, might have been on his way to another one. But there's just not much of a track record in the playoffs yet. But the caveat that same thing goes for Julius Randle, but we've seen the Knicks be like successful in the playoffs so far, even if it hasn't been a conference championship yet, but there hasn't been any like Hawks. Like last year, it was like a really competitive series with Miami that you had some games that could have gone either way. And I don't know if a Maxi Hield backcourt is going to hold up defensively. I don't really know what kind of ball handling they have. Like, it doesn't really seem like they used whatever resources they had in Philly to make the team at, like, they weren't trying to maximize for this postseason. And to be fair, neither were the Knicks, because there just weren't a lot of strong options on the table. But I think with the caveat that if Embiid is maybe so well-rested and he comes back from the meniscus injury, like looking like he does in regular season, then it might be a problem. If like Mitch isn't back and Isaiah Hartenstein fouls out in like the first half, like I don't think Jericho Sims is going to get the job done. But it's, I feel
Precious.
We've needed Precious. And I thought when he first came to the Knicks, he looked terrible. But since then, he's like the offensive rebounding, mm-hmm. which is, I mean, something crazy. Mitch is still leading the league in offensive rebounds, despite having missed like so much of the season at this point. And that's helpful.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's crazy.
He's been out for 10 weeks.
Yeah.
What the hell?
But it's exciting. Like, I think, like, if we had home court, I would feel comfortable picking the Knicks. And if anything, like, the only team I would go, like, ugh, where I'd be like, all right, this doesn't look great, is the Boston matchup. But the Knicks also have Villanova and the power of friendship, so I think anything's possible.
I was going to say that I think having guys who will get those hustle plays, like they'll get that loose ball, like similar to, I think it was Hart said to Mitch Robinson last, I think it was the playoffs or it was the end of the regular season last year, like that Hart gets rebounds that breaks teams. Like, it just sucks the energy. Like, you play defense for 22 seconds and he gets an offensive rebound and you're like, damn, now we got to do this again. Like, I think that part and DiVincenzo, like, they just somehow end up with the ball when it's a 50-50 ball for the most part, and they bring the energy, and so they're not like just a one skill level guy, which I think the Knicks in the past have been stuck on getting. Like, we're just getting a 3-point shooter, we're just getting this, but these, like, our guys now have more than one thing that they can do and that they bring to the team, and I think that is critical in making a deep playoff run.
Yeah, I mean, I've said multiple times already on this podcast, I just love how the Knicks match up with Boston. And I think that they've made these moves with Boston in mind too, especially if OG is healthy. Also, we know Porzingis doesn't stay healthy. And if he's out, he is, I feel like, the X factor for the Celtics, because with him on the floor, they're world beaters. They're incredible. And without him, it looks a lot different. It looks a lot different without him.
I just want to say it would be, the basketball gods would just be shining down if the Knicks beat the Celtics with Porzingis on the Celtics.
With Porzingis on the Celtics and healthy?
Yes. Yes. That's all I'm going to say about the unicorn. But yes, that is how I feel.
I completely forgot he was on the Knicks. Yeah,
like, drafted him, and then at like noon one day he went into a meeting with the board with them, and then they came back at like 12:30, and Woj is like, "Yeah, he wants to trade." And at like 1 p.m. he was gone. I was heartbroken because it happened so quickly.
Oh my god!
And this was like when I was still a teacher, so you know, doing my job. I'm teaching. I'm not on my phone. And then it just escalates so quickly. And I've never been so devastated about a Knicks trade. Anything Knicks related was that. The most devastation.
Dang.
I'm clearly over it X amount of years later.
Yeah, if anything, worries me about the matchup is, to the extent we've seen Jalen struggle at all this year, it's against not so much guard defenders, but wings with a lot of length. and they have a lot of people to throw at him. I could see that series being a brick fest, especially if hopefully Boston does that late game thing where they just jack up threes every possession. That's beautiful. Boston sports teams have terrorized me my entire life so much that when the Celtics lose, it's like I win, which is obviously a really healthy approach to sports. But
yeah,
it's yeah, like it. No, I mean it's so weird having lived as a Knicks fan and through like catastrophe after catastrophe and like team that doesn't make sense and to have just like a team that on paper, like, oh, I understand these lineups. Like, this is like a theoretically how you construct a basketball team. And there are going to be questions about, like at the absolute highest level, like as much as like there's been all these conversations about like, what can you win with Jalen Brunson as your best player? The team is, I think, because if you look at the contracts for so many of the players, like if so many players are, it's rare to have this quantity of good basketball players and to be able to construct lineups. And it's just very, it feels not totally outlandish to think in terms of like 2014 Spurs, 2004 Pistons, even if like that's like the theoretical ceiling, I think. But no, it's like, it's been a really like wonderful and weird, cautiously optimistic time to be a Knicks fan, which.
And they have bigger star players than those teams.
Yeah. Like it's, I mean, the 2014 Spurs were just like probably the best, like the level of execution in that finals was so spectacular that that's probably.
With Duncan playing like 24 minutes a game.
Yeah. We know that's not going to happen with Tibbs. But it's,
Well, Taj Gibson is here to save the season. So I wouldn't be too worried about the rotations.
Yeah, I do hope we can get Taj versus Thanasis at some point. Just like the exercise of futility. Because Taj, I love the guy. He's had a wonderful career that some like Matt Rockets game, the point blank misses and like him like motioning to Tibbs, like I can't do this anymore. It was almost as gross as a foul call at the end of that game.
I didn't understand that one. I didn't understand where there's no time left on the clock. I didn't understand why they're calling a foul when he's clearly just throwing it up there. It's just bad all around. And then the refs immediately knew that they did something wrong. It's like, come on, man.
Yeah, broke Knicks superfan Ben Stiller. The most like wholesome fan I've ever seen on Twitter. It's just like, no one can ever say that guy does not love the Knicks because he is so supportive of every player. And it's pretty awesome. Compared to Stephen A., like the all-time fake Knicks fan. Who, like, I don't even think knows half the players on the roster.
You think he has time to watch basketball? No. Because, you know, he likes to blame LeBron for the slam dunk contest. That's something he said earlier this week again. I'm just like, dude, Stephen A., shut the fuck up.
Sometimes, no one cares. In order to have takes as off the wall as he does, you have to, like, keep your information limited.
Into the anabolic chamber and just ignore everything.
Yeah, you have to make sure you don't really know everything that's going on, so that way you can just kind of go balls to the wall.
You just have a surface level understanding about everything.
Obviously, you mentioned the concern about like Jalen, like how can the Knicks win? Like if Jalen Brunson is your best player, and I think at this point, I mean, we know this with teams with small guys can win championships. We've kind of seen that, and we can understand it. And I think at this point, Brunson, you know, I think he's grown a lot since he was like Luka's kind of like sidekick a little bit, and now he is like what at least the third best point guard in the East, maybe second, probably second best point guard in the East. And so at this point, I don't really think you can – I don't really think that Brunson, I guess, is a concern. At least when I watch the Knicks, I'm not like, this like this guy's not good enough. I'm like, no, he's legit. He's probably going to make All-NBA this year. I would be surprised if he didn't. Like, this is a legit top 15 guy, I think. He's definitely grown into that. And I think we can really see it now with – obviously with Randall being out, it just kind of adds to the – impressiveness, I guess. I mean, I know they've been sliding a little bit, but still, it's like, this is a very legit guy. This is a very legit point guard who can absolutely lead a team. And it's part of the reason why I am, a little concerned, slightly, about it. I feel good. We have Jrue Holiday. It's like, okay, it's all good. It's all good. But, you know, if there's a guy who can might be able to kind of just beat up on old Jrue Holiday, I do feel like it'd be Jalen Brunson. Of anyone in the East. And so, you know, that I mean, that has to feel good. I really genuinely feel like the Knicks have a legit guy.
It feels...
Does Brunson have a Nick... Sorry, go
ahead. No, it feels good to have a point guard that you can, like, believe in and trust. Like, you know, that is... That I'm like, wow, like, I'm excited. Like, I know that you are going to get the job done, whether... Even if he's not having a good shooting night, because that's happened, he still can impact the game in other ways. And something that I just like about him is he draws fouls, but he's not baiting for a foul. Like, you know what I mean? Like that, not my favorite part of the game, but it's not as egregious. It's not as egregious as others. And for that, you know, you got to use the little guy, you know, to your advantage. So I will say that.
Yeah. And I mean, last year he wasn't the problem, like in the slight, like he was, pretty amazing against the Heat, playing like the entire game, game five, game six, keeping a minute while Randall was having one of those like tour date shooting nights. The Knicks have like been getting a lot of really good coverage lately, but the extent which he saved the Knicks and basically transformed them as a franchise has been really special. Because as a Knicks, Mets, Jets fan, there has not been a lot of great things over the years. And just having someone who, even though he was like in his press conference, like, I'm not here to be a savior. Just having someone who's such a, like a professional, an adult, like
a leader.
He's the most Miami Heat player to never play in the Miami Heat. It's funny, like my best friend from growing up went to Nova and wasn't really an NBA guy, but when Brunson came to the Knicks, it's like, I'm supporting this guy forever. He's gonna transform. And I remember like being so impressed with him in that playoff series against Utah. But I think it's like there's always going to be something special about smaller guards who just you can tell how competitive they are. After the Heat series last year, Spoelstra went on this like long talk about like how special of a competitor Jalen is. And yeah, like we'll see how things end up, but he feels like one of the most like highest approval rating New York athletes in recent memory.
Ever.
Yeah, maybe going back to like Derek Jeter or something. Like,
yeah, it's totally.
I think he could be the best player. I think the Knicks are also benefiting from there being a lot of like whenever we try to do those top 10 lists of players in the league right now, it's so murky outside of, to me, like Jokic 1, Giannis 2 seems pretty set in stone, but. Besides that, like, it could be all over the place because you have so many people who haven't proved anything in the playoffs yet. So many older players who you don't know if they'll hold up. Right. So it's like the homer in me thinks it's very, very possible that he could go on a really special playoff run. And if Julius plays closer to regular season Julius, which is an all-time if, like, I feel like... going back to that legendary 2008 Celtics title, anything's possible, I think.
Well, so I was going to ask, does Jalen Brunson have a nickname? I don't think so, right? So let's coin him a nickname today, the Messiah.
I'll take it. It up. I mean, he's... I definitely
he's the Messiah!
Yeah, it's like... My issue with, like, when people call him JB is there's a lot of other JBs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So many JBs.
Yeah. And there's a lot of Jalens. Mm-hmm. Who are also you have a lot of, like, good player Jalens. Yeah.
That's a mediocre.
Jalen Green.
exactly.
Yeah, the most mediocre player in the NBA.
His basketball reference page has Brunson Burner as a
okay. For him. Honestly, Brunson I don't hate Burner. That. I was thinking Action Brunson. A playoff
hey,
action. I kind of, that might be it.
Action Brunson. No, I love that.
Action Brunson. Actually. I think I need to start that. That's good. I do like Brunson Burner.
Yeah, no, that's the best I've heard so far.
Brunson Burner.
Yeah, or maybe like Clyde will come into something by accident. It's been so nice for Breen and Clyde to have like
good basketball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like
Brunson Burger.
There Brunson probably is Burger. A Brunson Burger no? somewhere like near MSG.
He's not that thick.
I was gonna say a burger. I think like a zero. Like I just think zero for some reason. Like I don't know why, but yeah, no, okay. I don't see that for him.
He's definitely not a zero.
Yeah, Action Brunson. I kind of like that.
Nice. Well, you heard it here first, folks. Now, if you were to go into the playoffs and choose exactly which matchups you had along the way, what would it be? First round, second round, third round. And then finals too. If you were to go to the finals, who would you want to go against?
Big question.
They're really thinking hard.
I think the dream scenario would be 2 seed against like if the Bulls made it out of the play-in or something.
Oh my gosh.
Or the Nets. Maybe they'll have the post-coach bump. Then Cavs second round. And I want the Boston matchup at some point.
For sure. Like,
we're not going to be afraid of them. And then the finals, I don't know, actually, because I'm a lot more scared of the teams out west.
the thing is, I kind of want it to be like a West team that it'd be like, okay, like the Knicks are here. Right, like if it's, you know, if it's kind of not one of the best, it's like, all right, whatever. People won't view it as a real championship. You know what I mean? That's my worst fear.
If it's the Timberwolves, it's like, oh, who cares?
Exactly. That's my worst fear.
But if it's the Nuggets,
like if the Mavs, the Lakers sneak into the finals or something.
Yeah, that's not.
The Knicks beat up on the Mavs.
Mavs have already done so much for us. It's. I mean, this is going to sound totally blasphemous. I don't hate the Denver matchup.
Wow.
And some of it is recency bias because, like, we smoked them when they came to MSG. But
okay.
I
was it one of those nights that Jokic didn't care?
He cared. We just, it was everyone That's else good. Was pretty terrible.
No, it was only one night.
OG did a great job. And
okay.
It's the kind of thing with Denver, the question with them, I think, is going to be whether outside of their starting five and Christian Braun, whether the younger guys are going to be able to step up. Now, granted, it sounds ridiculous to like want to go against the best player in the world coming off like one of the best playoff runs in recent memory. But OKC scares me, although we'll see if Shea turns into James Harden in the playoffs. And Minnesota... That I feel like if they'd be good enough to get to the finals, they might have figured out a lot of things.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, but
if they went against the Lakers, even say the Lakers are like the 7 seed and they make it to the finals, that would still be a legitimate championship if the Knicks beat the Lakers. Mm-hmm. If the Lakers went against, or if the Knicks went against the Warriors, that if the Warriors figured some things out, that would be seen as a legitimate championship too. I think. It'd be weird to have a Timberwolves-Knicks championship. I don't even know how I'd feel about that.
I kind of feel like the... just this just me on the outside. I feel like the Clippers is actually feels like a bad matchup for the Knicks. Kind of like, I feel like the, if like it was going to be Clippers Knicks, I feel like Kawhi would, like, obviously you have OG to guard Kawhi, but then it's like, okay, well then who guards Paul George? And then I feel like they could deal with Brunson in a kind of specific way. And I
longer wings.
I feel like that would be a bad matchup for them.
I just have no faith in the Clippers.
Yeah, I mean, who knows if they'll even make it there.
They've been winning like crazy, and I'm like, okay, show me in the playoffs. Be healthy in the playoffs.
Yeah, that's I mean, it's the kind of thing I feel like any team that gets out of the West is, you're going to have a lot of reasons to, because that'll be such a gauntlet, unless it's like a 2021 Phoenix Suns situation where all the teams they play are hurt. it's just the, like, any of the teams with a lot of question marks around them will have answered a lot of them by getting there, most likely. Like, I could see pretty much, and it's so wide open, too, which sounds crazy, because, like, Denver is at the point where you're wondering if they could do anything to make you nervous about how, because they're just, like, not, they don't look very, like, great right now. Like, they are... have like an almost identical record to Phoenix with like similar, if not worse, underlying numbers.
They've had some injury issues. Jamal Murray hasn't been healthy all year. And then Caldwell Pope has been dealing with the hamstring thing that just keeps coming back. And Aaron Gordon has been in and out of the lineup a little bit too. So they've just been dealing with a lot of different little injuries. And it's just about if they're all going to be healthy at the same time. And I think that that's one of the reasons them not keeping Bruce Brown hurts them, because that was basically insurance for losing someone in the rotation. They could just put him in that place. Oops, I just hit my microphone. I don't feel great about Denver this year, just because, I mean, I love Jokic. He's amazing, and he could do a lot by himself. But if you just go into the playoffs with a couple of these pieces lagging and not hitting all cylinders at the right time, you could run into some hiccups. So, and the West is just a freaking bloodbath. I wouldn't be scared of the Thunder, but that's just because every time the Lakers have gone against them, it's been a pretty easy matchup for the Lakers for whatever reason. I think that the Thunder's size problem is a Achilles heel that'll come back to bite them in the playoffs. I don't see them getting to the finals. In fact, I see Lakers at 7 versus the second seed Thunder. I'm extremely happy with that matchup in the playoffs. So my having confidence against the 2 seed is a huge red flag, in my opinion, for the Thunder. So that's just kind of the West Coast dish right now. That's what we've got going on. Well,
I do have...
We did pretty well, you guys. Well, what's up?
I do have one more. One more quick question. I was looking at the upcoming schedule for the New York Knicks here, and I'm curious on one thing. There's a little bit of there's a couple little stretches that I think are more interesting. Tell me which one you think would tell you more about this Knicks team. Immediately after the All-Star break, when we come back, it is at Philly. Then home against Boston, Detroit, Pelicans, and the Warriors. But then, later, just a little bit later in the year, you have this other stretch of at home against Philly twice, and then the Blazers, the Kings, the Warriors, and then the Nuggets. And that's... Blazers, Kings, Warriors, Nuggets, that's all on the road. That's the road trip.
And when is that?
That one starts, it's March 10th. So in about a month, a little less than a month.
Wow. I had not looked that far on the schedule. Wow, that's a gauntlet. I think I'm going to say if we can get through, I think it will say a lot about us if that second one. Because I'm anticipating that, you know, some people that they have some nagging injuries, that's kind of taken care of. Maybe we're closer to a Randall return, possibly back yet, maybe. Does the timeline add up? No?
I think it's kind of close.
So maybe he's healed miraculously. So we kind of get that. I'm going to say that second one. But I do think the long West Coast trip, coming from someone who has been, is part of a program that goes and travels, a long trip like that will tell you a lot about like them as a group and how you are going to like respond. And those are some tough matchups. Even if they're not the best team, like it still is going to take a lot to be locked in and focused and get what needs to be done, taken care of, especially going to Denver. You said Denver's in that last one, correct?
Denver's, yeah, the last game.
Yeah, the altitude change. Like, I think all of those things, like that adversity, is will kind of tell a lot about who, you know, who we will be going into the end of the season, end of the regular season.
Yeah, like I, like 76ers coming out of the break, even though it's on the road, you would hope enough pieces are back to beat an Embiid-less team. I will not be going to Celtics-Knicks because that does not sound particularly fun with Taj Gibson most likely still in the rotation. I think the, yeah, it's like that Denver matchup at the end of a road trip, assuming that the main pieces are back by then. You would love to see the team come out and, because so often that's a schedule loss. But they have a couple days off before it, and if we could sweep the season matchup with Denver, that would be, or like be, if like be competitive and show that like, oh, this is a, this like a healthy or reasonably healthy Knicks team can go toe to toe with anyone. I think that will help set some playoff expectations. And yeah, it's like, you just, you don't want to skid, I think, which we've already been going through, but like having Dante and Hartenstein back, like out of the break, and Bogdanovich, that will like be a little more of a real rotation rather than the like Jacob Toppin types. And we also just have to keep the minute load down too. So yeah, that's a long-winded way of saying that I think it's going to be getting to the end of that road trip without Tibbs killing our players that I think will be really significant.
Yeah, I was going to say, Nick, are you writing into Tibbs to tell him about the minute load, or are we going to, or he's got that under control?
Yeah, no, we'll go outside the garden and just clear all the exits and stuff so we can stop him. I don't blame him for the injuries we've had so far. Like if anything, it's, I wish we had maybe been a little more proactive before the trade deadline, to avoid having to like put the minutes load on Dante in particular. But like Jalen's had some games in the 40s, but he's not like playing 41 minutes a game or anything. So I think it having as deep a team as we do should, like, knock on wood, stop the 45-minute OG games. Even though in the playoffs, like, I would be shocked if we don't get maybe, like, a Dante, OG, Randall, Brunson playing, like, the entire second half type thing. Mm-hmm. But
yeah,
that also, I mean, we've seen Spoelstra do that with the
new players. It's wild to do. It's not unheard of in the playoffs.
It's just, like, we shouldn't have that against, like, the Hawks on March 5th. that'd be another great first round matchup if they end up in the play-in. It's because there's such a nosedive in quality after the top six. And I do want to see us beat Orlando, though, because we keep running into them while really shorthanded. And it's very annoying, particularly that last game where, like, Brunson was like a minus five, I think, and we lost by 30. Like,
yeah, he kept throwing the ball away.
Yeah, it's can't put too much of a load. Though thankfully, we know he didn't try in the All-Star game, so that's less of a load, thankfully.
All right, well, that was great, you guys. Thank you so much.
Thanks for tuning in too. Big Market Bias. If you have any strong opinions on anything we said here today, please email us at bigmarketbias@gmail.com. And if you hear a credible NBA analyst with a prediction, send that in to us as well. Have a fantastic weekend, everyone. For Smalls, for Nick, for Cam, I am Peter Daubert, signing off.